All right, so tonight is Tu B'Shvat. So I want to discuss some ideas about Tu B'Shvat.
Today.
Tonight is Tu B'Shvat. The Tu B'Shvat is a holiday which is, I guess, becoming more well-known as time goes on. People have their different ways they like to celebrate it or appreciate what it's about. I think in the world we're in, where the environment takes a front seat, Tu B'Shvat is more popular. People look at it as a day to celebrate trees, celebrate nature, which it is a day to celebrate the trees and nature. But I want to discuss exactly what Tu B'Shvat is and some lessons we can learn from Tu B'Shvat. So we'll first start just as technically what Tu B'Shvat means in terms of the Mishnah and the Talmud, and then we'll discuss some ideas that we can learn from Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is, we'll call it a minor festival at best. It's not really a holiday. I mean, there's no celebration that we have, per se. The only practical celebration we have of Tu B'Shvat in terms of halacha is the fact that Tachanun is skipped during davening. Now, Tachanun is a prayer we skip whenever it's a joyous day, so we skip Tachanun during davening. There are other later customs, Kabbalistic customs, later customs, to have certain, you know, eat certain things on Tu B'Shvat. There is a custom which is quoted to eat lots of fruits. We'll talk about what that custom means, why we eat lots of fruits on Tu B'Shvat. But in terms of your practical obligations of Tu B'Shvat, it was just skipping Tachanun. What is Tu B'Shvat? So the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Tractate Rosh Hashanah, that there are four different Rosh Hashanahs during the year. So we all know about Rosh Hashanah as a Rosh Hashanah, but there's four different dates that mark other New Years. So one of those dates is Tu B'Shvat. What does Tu B'Shvat mark? So the Mishnah says it's the New Year for the trees. Now, the Mishnah is not just telling us a cute idea that trees can have a birthday. I mean, a lot of times, if you, like the preschool speaks to have birthday of the trees on Tu B'Shvat sometimes. You know, it's not the tree's birthday. But it's relevant for practical halachas. This is where it gets a little technical, but we want to become intelligent Jews and understand what exactly it is. So let's understand these halachas for a second. There's a few areas in which Tu B'Shvat is relevant halachically. Number one is, if you live in Israel, you have to take tithes from your fruits. The halacha is, for some fruits it's a Torah halacha, for some it's a rabbinic halacha, but you have to tithe your fruits. Those tithes, some are given to Levites, some had to be eaten originally in Jerusalem. A lot of different halachas what you do with those tithes, but you have to tithe your fruits. Even in modern Israel, fruits grown there needs to be tithed. You have to take off Meiser. If you did not take off Meiser from your fruits, they're not kosher to eat. You're not allowed to eat those fruits. Which, as an aside, is why if you do encounter fruits in Israel, even in American stores, you have to know what to do with them. It's probably advisable to avoid buying them unless there is some sort of hashgacha on them. If you do buy them, call your rabbi to figure out how to deal with it, because you can't just eat those fruits. Like in Costco last week, they were selling Jaffa oranges and Jaffa grapefruits, and there's no particular hashgacha on those. So I just avoided buying them. But if you were to buy those fruits, you'd have to properly take truma, take maaser, tithe them properly. Especially this year, where it's actually the Shemitah year in Israel, it's the sabbatical year, you have even more halachas to deal with. So if it lets you know what you're doing, I would advise to avoid Israeli-grown fruits with anashkacha this year for sure, and any year. But anyway, so you have a concept of tithing, of taking meiser. Now, the way that meiser works is that you're supposed to take a tenth of fruits off of your produce, but it has to be only on the fruits of the year. So if I have a pile of last year's fruits and this year's fruits, I can't take a tenth off of this year's pile in order to cover last year's pile. It has to be of its own year. So the cutoff point for this halacha is Tu B'Shvat. So fruits which blossomed prior to Tu B'Shvat, they belong to the previous year. And fruits that blossomed after Tu B'Shvat belong to the coming year. That's one place where Tu B'Shvat applies as a new year for the trees in terms of deciding which year do we associate these fruits with in terms of the halacha of tithes, of meiser. That's number one. Is that clear? Okay, not too complex. Another place where Tu B'Shvat applies halachically is for the halacha of Orla. Orla is, this actually applies even outside of Israel. If you plant a fruit tree, you're not allowed to benefit from those fruits during the first 3 years. Now, typically, your tree will not grow fruits during the first 3 years. If they do, they're usually not very good fruits. But if your tree grows fruits in the first 3 years of its existence, you can't use those fruits. That's called Orla. The Torah says you have to destroy them. You're not allowed to benefit from those fruits. Why that is, we can discuss a different time. It's not relevant to this class per se, but that's the idea of Orla. Now, the way do you count these 3 years? So let's say you plant a tree 2 months prior to Rosh Hashanah, right? Halachically, it'll be 45 days, the exact number. Let's just take a round number. 2 months from Rosh Hashanah. So when Rosh Hashanah hits, that means year one of that tree is now over. It's a year old. So even though it's only been 2 months, that tree is now considered a year old. When next Rosh Hashanah hits, it's 2 years old. When next Rosh Hashanah hits, it's 3 years old. So once it's 3 years old, you think you're past Orla. But the rule is that you're not allowed to use those fruits until Tu B'Shvat arrives. Because even though you count the age of the tree based on Rosh Hashanah, the permission to eat those fruits only would apply when the next Tu B'Shvat comes around. So that is the halacha of Orla. Technically, in Israel, there's an idea called Ravai, not the Ravai, that the fourth year is supposed to dedicate those to eat them in Jerusalem. Again, that's not necessarily relevant to us nowadays and outside of Israel. But there is an idea of Orla even outside of Israel, which you should not eat your fruits in the first 3 years.
Yeah. Did you say Orla applies even?
Orla applies even outside of Israel, yeah. So those are two technical places the Tu B'Shvat actually does have a halachic meaning. That's what the Mishnah refers to when it says the new year of the trees. It's not talking about any environmental type type ideas. It's not talking about celebrating the trees around you, but it's talking about these two technical halachic concepts that you count years of trees based on Tu B'Shvat. Now, so those are the technical meanings of Tu B'Shvat. Now, we actually regard it as like a holiday to some degree, which is strange because, I mean, what I describe isn't so joyous. It's just it's a fact, it's a rule. Now, this is the day that you decide to age your trees. But what's the joy of Tu B'Shvat? Where does the simcha come from? Why is it regarded as a holiday? So, I wanted to address that. But the first thing I want to address before that is, why is it Tu B'Shvat? I mean, Tu B'Shvat means the 15th of Shvat. Tesvav, the 15th of Shvat. Why is the 15th of Shvat the day that we mark the year for the tree? I mean, why not Rosh Hashanah? Why not Pesach? Why not any other day? Why does the Mishnah tell us it's Tu B'Shvat? So the Gemara describes that if you look at the cycle of seasons in Israel, by Tu B'Shvat, most of the rain on an average year has already fallen in Israel. In Israel, the seasons are very, very specific. You know, you don't get rain in the summer. You get rain in the fall and the winter. And once spring comes around, the rain stops. That's why it's so important they get rain at the right times in Israel, because if they don't, they're not going to have rain the rest of the year. The seasons are very set. And that's why we have special prayers for rain for Israel. That's why we have times where we ask for rain, don't ask for rain in the davening. It's because the seasons there are so specific, you need rain at the right time. If rain doesn't come at the right time, then you're in trouble. So there are years where Israel, unfortunately, doesn't get rain in the right time. And you know, if they have a drought, it can be very terrible, because if they don't have rain by December, January, February, they're not going to have rain until the following fall. It's very rare to find rain in the summer in Israel, especially in most parts of Israel. That's why the rabbis instituted special fast days. If rain does not fall in Israel, there's a whole tractate in the Talmud, Maseches Tainis, discusses what's the procedure of fasting and praying for rain when the rain hasn't fallen. So Tu B'Shvat is the day that most of the rain has already fallen in Israel, even though there's still much winter to come. And Rashi tells us that when Tu B'Shvat arrives, enough rain has fallen that the trees are already preparing to produce fruits for the coming year. The sap is rising up the trees, Rashi says. So it's the day where so you can attribute that all of the fruits which will sprout in the coming year can all be traced back to the rain which they had by Tu B'Shvat. So Tu B'Shvat is the kind of a turning point for the trees. The winter has come, the trees have died out, and the leaves have fallen off and stopped producing fruits. It takes in all the rain. And after Tu B'Shvat, the trees are looking forward now to the spring, when they're going to blossom and produce the fruits for the coming year. And when Tu B'Shvat comes around, that Rashi says the sap is already starting to rise up the trees, getting ready for the coming harvest. So that's why the day of 15th of Shvat is chosen, because that day is the day where the trees have now taken. It's a turning point for the trees. They're now looking forward to the coming year. Now this is only. I think it's Chazal's determination. I don't think there's any Torah source for that date. And obviously it's an estimate, because we're going on the lunar calendar and the season is going from the lunar calendar. So it's an estimated date. You know, it's very hard to say exactly that day every year it happens, because sometimes it can be much earlier in the winter, later in the winter. But it's the date the rabbis designate. This is the day where we're going to start. The trees are, in general, starting to look forward to the coming season, and therefore that's the new year for the trees.
We have an exception date where this was inaugurated.
I mean, you had to have this date set for the time the Jews entered into Israel and with Joshua. I'm saying that's when it was relevant. I don't know exactly when they first instituted the 15th of Shvat, but the halacha is relevant from the day they stepped foot into the land of Israel. So the day they stepped foot into Israel, they have to know this halacha in terms of when to tie their fruits. We discussed it earlier. I mean, it's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. It's a Mishnah. Yeah, we discussed earlier the ramifications of it. But it was a relevant halacha from the day they stepped foot into the land of Israel, and they had to know these things as soon as they started farming in Israel. Yeah, tithing is right.
There is a pasuk about tithing.
Right, tithing fruits. But in terms of the date of Tu B'Shvat, that was only relevant once they entered into the land. So even though Tu B'Shvat is relevant to the seasons in Israel, we celebrate Tu B'Shvat throughout the world. And the great Hasidic master of Sadek HaKohen, he writes, the reason that we celebrate this date in Israel throughout the world, and even the date's even relevant outside of Israel in terms of Orla, is because we understand that the entire world is blessed through the land of Israel. When we eat bread, and we say benching after we eat, so the verse in the Torah describing benching, it says, "V'chalta v'savata v'irachta." You should eat, be satiated, you should bless God, al aretz tova shenoslach, on the great land He gave you. Now, the food that we eat typically is not coming from Israel. I mean, we eat food typically grown maybe America, South America. I mean, the foods we eat are not typically Israeli made. But yet, we're blessing God for the land of Israel. So Rav Tzadok writes, it's because we understand the entire world, all the fruits, all the produce in the world, all comes to the blessing land of Israel. God showers down blessing on Israel, and that is able to spread throughout the entire world. So the season in Israel, the dates in Israel, the reign of Israel are very relevant to us, in that the entire world is blessed through that which God does to the land of Israel. So the date of Tu B'Shvat, even though it's in terms of the seasons, is relevant to the trees in Israel, we understand that that relevance applies throughout the entire world, since the whole world is blessed through the land of Israel. We do have the custom, it's quoted in halachic sources, to eat a variety of fruits on Tu B'Shvat. Some people have their specific fruits they like to eat, some just try to eat as many fruits as they can. An idea simply is to appreciate the trees, since this is the day where we do mark as a new year for the trees, looking forward to the coming year. It's a day where we try to appreciate fruits, we bless God as the Borei creates, the one who creates the fruit of the tree. And we're recognizing the kindness of Hashem in providing such a variety of fruits in this world. So that's the idea of eating fruits on Tu B'Shvat. But again, I still understand a little better. What's the joy of the day? Why is it joyous for us? So I want to share with you just a few thoughts in terms of the symbolism of Tu B'Shvat, the symbolism of trees, and help us to understand that there's a joy we should also pull out of Tu B'Shvat. Now, I've mentioned many times before in this class that the Jewish year, in terms of the holiday cycle, it very much mimics the calendar cycle, the seasons. The month of Nisan is the spring. Pesach has to be in springtime. That's when the world is being rejuvenated. All the trees are once again producing flowers and leaves, and the grass is growing. And that's the day when the Jewish people are rejuvenated. That's the day Pesach, when we were chosen as a people, is the birth of a nation. As nature is reborn, we are reborn as people. Sukkot is the harvest festival. And it's the time of the year around the harvest festival. And it's the end of the season. The holiday season in the Torah really ranges from Pesach to Sukkot. That's the season from spring through the harvest. And that those are the holidays you have in the Torah. On Sukkot, we look around the world. And on Sukkot, we see that the trees are starting to shed their leaves. It's starting to get cold. It's the fall. Nature is kind of dying out. And on Sukkot, we have to remind ourselves that even though nature is dying out, we have to still always be vibrant and alive in the service of God. So God tells us, we should take the most beautiful fruits of the trees, take your esrog, take your lulav, and use those to praise God to show that even as nature is dying, we still are alive in our service of God. So that's the Sukkot very much ties in with the cycle. Hanukkah is in the depth of the winter. Hanukkah is where the leaves have already fallen off the trees. It's the coldest parts of the year. And on Hanukkah, we recognize the fact that nature around us is kind of dead. And we light a fire. We light our fires to show that we have, despite the fact that nature has died, we have a warmth in our lives. We have the warmth of God, the warmth of Torah. And we ignite the fire of Hanukkah during the coldest parts of the winter. In the cycle, we can talk each holiday how it fits the cycle of the seasons. But Tu B'Shvat begins a brand new cycle. Tu B'Shvat is when nature is starting to awaken. Like we said, the trees are now preparing for the coming year. We as Jews, no, we've been holding on throughout the winter. Winter is a time where it's cold, where things are dead, and we try to grasp on for inspiration, despite the fact that nature around us is dying. And as Tu B'Shvat approaches, we can start sensing spring in the air. You know, as cold as it was this morning and yesterday, But as Tupushvat approaches, you know, we understand that it's now February, Marta is along the way. Today is actually very nice out. And, you know, there's 1 month till Purim, 1 month till Pesach, and it's going to be springtime. It's already coming.
Hamsatani Phil says we still have 6 more weeks.
Well, he didn't learn about Tupushvat. You know, he should have come to class. So the Tupushvat is supposed to be for us a sign that there is a coming spring. And just like in terms of the world reawakens, is vibrant, the spring comes around. So too, as Jews, we always have to hang on to the times without inspiration, and always look forward to times of inspiration. Rav Hirsch writes that the cycle of the trees is really an analogy to Jewish history. You know, trees, as winter comes along, they seem to wither up, they seem to die. But even in the cold of winter, we celebrate the rebirth. You know, we're sitting here in the cold of winter, the trees and the leaves on them, it's very cold, it's snowy out, there's snow on the ground. But yeah, we're going to celebrate the trees having a rebirth. Tomorrow is the day to celebrate the trees having a rebirth for the next year. Because we know the trees will sprout again. We know that they're going to produce blossoms and produce fruits, despite the fact that right now they're cold and withered. So, and from within the tree, there's going to be blossoms coming out once again. It's only a facade that they look dead, because they're not really dead. They're really alive and well, those trees. So Rav Hirsch says that Jewish history as well is very much the same thing. You know, so I'll read to you some quotes from Rav Hirsch. He always writes very beautifully. This is from Rav Hirsch's collective writings. He has about this probably maybe an 8-volume set. I'll translate it to English, Rav Hirsch's collective writings. And the first 2 volumes are about the seasons, about the holidays, about the months. So he writes that the 15th of Shvat is the new year of the trees, the birthday of blossoms, even in the middle of the winter. But in the midst of winter, Jewish wisdom points silently to the defoliated trees. Behold, today they are celebrating the birthday of the coming spring. Under this torn, dark, cold bark, new, fresh life pulsates. So it's an analogy to Jewish history. We see times in history where we seem to be dying, we seem to be withering, we seem to be cold. But the Jewish people never dies, and we never cease to thrive. And deep within us, like he says, fresh life pulsates. Because what did the trees lose? Of what were they deprived? The fruits of which they were robbed eventually have fallen anyways. The leaves which they lost had already withered. The twigs and branches broken by the storms were already dry, brittle, and lifeless. But their inner core remained alive and fresh. They will always weather the storm, as our people will survive the nocturnal terrors of our historic night. Now, the Jewish people, we were experiencing a night right now, the fact that we're in exile, the fact that we've been persecuted. But deep down within, since our roots are firmly planted, as we'll discuss, so we know that there will be fresh blossoms coming out of the Jewish people as well. And Tu B'Shvat is a day of inspiration, and in which we gain strength from. We should see that even as it looks bleak for the trees, I mean, if we didn't know about spring, we'd say the trees are long, they're dead, they're long gone, they're not producing anymore. But deep within, the trees are getting ready to produce once again. And that's Jewish history, that even when things look bleak for us, deep down we're ready to produce. He writes, but when frost and ice, storms, and the chill of winter still prevail, you will stop in joy and surprise to look upon the one violet that has raised its little head to the blanket of snow. You will think of the struggle that this little flower endured, and the strength which developed amidst these winter tempests. Then you will happily clasp it to your heart, filled with the hope and certainty that the 15th of Shvat has come. You will remember that even in a leap year, Shvat leads to Nisan, leads to Pesach. When the sun will shine, the springtime will smile, we will be able to see from the heavens and the earth that the winter has passed, etc., the time for singing has come, and we get to experience the spring. I mean, he writes at length, very beautifully, but we get the idea. The idea is that it's really a symbol for us, that since we do work by the seasons, the Jewish year works by the seasons, and we draw inspiration, when nature awakens, we awaken. So Tu B'Shvat is a time that we understand in our lives, in our year, and in history. Even when things seem to be cold and dead, deep down, we're ready to once again thrive. Everything leads to Pesach. Tu B'Shvat is the beginning of the season leading towards Pesach. Really, the Jewish year can be divided into 2 different sections. You have the holidays, that's the beginning, and from the Tisha B'Av, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and Hanukkah, that's kind of one set. And those are the holidays, you know, which take us through the fall, through the winter. And then you have Tu B'Shvat, leading us to Purim, leading us to Pesach, and Shavuos. Those holidays of the summer. We can discuss what those 2 groupings are. But Tu B'Shvat is really the first day leading us up towards Pesach, towards our rebirth, towards the miracles, towards the redemption of Pesach. The So that's one point of Tu B'Shvat. It's the inspiration we should draw on even when things look bleak and dead outside. Now there's another point which is said that when God created the world, if you look at the very beginning of the Torah, Parshas Bereishis, so God creates the trees, but God says that the way God creates the trees, He says that let the land sprout forth eitz pri yoseh pri, let the land sprout forth fruit trees that bear fruit. So God never commanded that there should be non-fruit bearing trees in this world. If you read what it says in chapter 1 of Bereishis, God only said that all trees should bear fruit. However, you look outside, and there are many trees that don't bear any fruit. Many trees, as they're called in Hebrew, Lani Srak, they're trees that don't bear any fruit. And the question is, where do those trees come from? If God never commanded that non-fruit-bearing trees should exist, why do we see non-fruit-bearing trees outside? So our rabbis teach us that was all a result of the sin of Adam. When Adam and Eve sinned, Adam and Chava, when they sinned, they brought death into the world. That brought constraint into the world. That brought limitation into the world. It impacted the world as a whole, not only people. We know that God cursed man, He cursed women, He cursed the snake, He cursed the land, it says. The land is now cursed because of you, is what God says to Adam. And because of you now, some of the trees that should have produced fruit don't produce fruit anymore. So really, all trees were supposed to produce fruit in the creation. It's only based on our sins that there's no fruit being produced. The Gemara does tell us, though, that in the future, after the final redemption, even the non-fruit-bearing trees will again produce fruit. Because the natural state of the world is that fruit should be produced by everything. Everything should be fruitful and productive. The only reason that these trees don't produce fruit is based on the sin of Adam and Eve. And once we can rectify that sin, when the world can reach its perfection, everything will again produce fruit. So Tu B'Shvat as the new year of the trees. So just like God judges us on our new year in Rosh Hashanah, so we're also looking at the trees for the coming year. And Tu B'Shvat is a time of prayer. It's a time where we can pray to God that we, daven, that we should see all the trees out there that seem to be not productive, not fruitful, they should bear fruits. The world should see its final perfection. The world should be able to rectify all of its problems and be able to be on a level where it was at the time of creation. And everything should produce fruit once again. And it's relevant to all of us because there's a famous analogy of the human being to a tree. The Torah tells us, "Chi Adam Eitz HaSadeh." Is a tree a person? But many rabbis take it that it's comparing a tree to a person, right? That people are compared to trees. That's what it says in the book of Devarim. It's stated by Rabbeinu Tam, the grandson of Rashi, right? That people are compared to trees. And what's that they were compared to trees? That we too, every human being should be productive and fruitful. We should all be able to fulfill our life missions. We should all be able to produce in life, accomplish in life, feel that we're productive people. But still, as a result of sin, just like the trees were cursed, they couldn't produce fruits. Many of us feel at times that we're constrained, that we can't produce in life. We have so many things we want to do, we wish we could do, we try to do, and we're unable to accomplish it. We can't bear fruits at times. We don't produce in life to our potential. So as we pray that the trees should all be able to produce fruits, including that prayer is that we should pray that we should be able to produce fruits. The Tu B'Shvat is a time for us to daven to God, that we should all be productive human beings, that we should all be able to fulfill our life mission, that we should all be accomplished and productive. We should be invigorated, you know, just as a tree in springtime. Just like the trees all in springtime will come out and blossom, we should also blossom as well in our lives. So there's parts of us that can be looked at as like these unproductive trees, non-fruit-bearing trees. And parts of us that aren't bearing fruits as they should. And we daven to God on Tu B'Shvat, since we have this analogy of the human being to the tree. Just like we daven that all trees should be able to bear fruits, we should also all bear fruits. We should also be productive, fruitful people. So that's another meaning of Tu B'Shvat, that it's a day of prayer, where we can pray that we want to see fruits in our lives. Now, why is it that a human being is compared to a tree? I mean, we said that we compare a human being to a tree. What's the connection? So the way it's understood is that a human being is an upside-down tree. What's the hallmark of a tree? It has its roots in the ground, and then it grows up, and it produces fruits and leaves and branches. So we're actually an upside-down tree. Why? Because our roots should be in heaven. Then we can say that our roots should be in our heads, or where our body is really rooted, because that's where we get the source of our existence, at least on any sort of higher levels in our heads. And we should have our roots up in the heavens, you know, in God. And then our branches stretch down here to earth. So we don't look at our feet as our roots, we look at our heads as our roots. And we're that upside-down tree. Now if you think about that analogy for a second, actually, there are those that say also that when you put on the tefillin, so you have a shin on the tefillin. So the shin represents the roots going upwards and then coming down into a trunk. So it's like you have your roots up in heaven, and then the shin coming down into this world. It's like upside down tree as well. But the word for in Hebrew for tree is eitz. Eitz is the word for tree. In the Hebrew language, it's different than other languages in that it's the building blocks of creation. So the words you find in Hebrew, the words themselves carry meaning. I don't think the word tree, I assume in English, doesn't carry meaning beyond tree. You can't break it up into a T-R-E-N-E and figure out deeper connections. But Hebrew, we look at the Hebrew alphabet as the building blocks of the world. God created the world with the Hebrew language. And Hebrew terminology is very precise and exact. It contains within it much deeper ideas of creation. So the Hebrew word for tree, eitz, is the two letters ayin and tzadi. So what does ayin tzadi mean? The letter tzadi, some call it tzadik as well. And the Gemara tells us, nonetheless, it actually represents a tzadik, a righteous person. That's the letter tzadi. The ayin is an eye. To examine something is ayin. So ayin tzadik, the word for tree would be examine the righteous person. Examine the righteous person. Ayin tzadik. So what does it mean we should examine the righteous person? It's that a tree for us is a model of a righteous person, of a tzaddik. The makeup of a tree should be a model for us as to how to be a tzaddik, who is a tzaddik, what makes you righteous, what makes you pious. So let's look at the tree for a second. The tree sinks roots into the ground. And it needs to have firm ground. If the ground is not firm, the tree will go kerplunk. Unfortunately, we had a tree fall over in our yard a few years back. It's because it wasn't, the ground wasn't a good place for it, and it fell. So you have to sink your roots into firm ground. That's how a tree first grows. And a good tree will not grow all so quickly. It'll develop roots, and it'll slowly get taller. And often they don't produce fruits for many years, because the trees are busy growing and maturing before they produce fruits. It has to establish a very firm root base, and then it can start growing higher. After it grows higher, so slowly it stretches wider, it grows larger branches, more leaves, produces fruits. Ultimately, end up with this huge tree, has roots sunk very deep into the ground, very wide-reaching, and it provides fruit, provides wood, provides protection, provides shade, and it influences many who are around. So the analogy to a tzaddik, to this pious person, is the same thing. Someone who's a righteous person first needs to work on developing roots. You have to have roots in good character traits. You have to have the fear of God. You have to have roots in Torah study. You have to be a firm, planted, concrete, stable person. Those are the roots. Now, once this person develops roots, that person is developing the roots to bring in also the nourishment to the tree. And that person is being nourished by where the roots are. So if the roots are in good things, they're planted in where they need to be planted, so that person can't, the tree now is firmly in the ground, it can't be budged. It's taking its nourishment from the right places, and you can't knock it over. Now, as that tzaddik develops roots, he slowly is growing. He's becoming a greater person, he or she is a greater person. And eventually, after a long time, the tree goes taller, the righteous person grows taller, and then only then starts spreading out the branches and producing fruits. I mean, everybody eventually will gain from this righteous person, but only based on the fact that he or she took time to lay roots in the right places, grow slowly in a way which is stable, which can't be knocked over, and then only at that point starts growing outwards, producing shade and producing fruits. That's why the Talmud compares a tzaddik to, it says it's compared to a tree whose roots are planted in a pure place, and its branches may stretch into impure places. But if you cut off the branches, the tree still stays in its place in the pure area. Meaning that tzaddik has his roots planted in purity, in Torah, and God, and good midos, and good character traits. And therefore, that person can even stretch into other places, influence others in many ways, but they won't be influenced themselves. They'll remain pure, they'll remain stable, because their roots are planted in the right place. So that's the idea of a tree representing a tzaddik. It's a time for establishing roots, for growing slowly, and then only eventually do you pass on what you have to offer to others. And then those fruits carry within it the ability to produce many, many more trees. Because the tzaddik's words, he's able to, Rashi tells us that the actions, the mitzvos of a tzaddik, those are considered like his offspring. And I would say it's because that for a tzaddik's actions are able to produce and impact so many people. It's like having a child can produce infinite children. A tzaddik doing a proper action can influence people infinitely. So the more a person establishes their roots, and the stronger, more stable they are in their roots, the more influential they can become to themselves and to those around them. know, often when we speak to the boys in the yeshiva, so we say a lot of the time spent in yeshiva when they're studying is to establish their roots. They're not at a point where they're going to yet teach others or influence others in any direct ways, but you're establishing roots. If your roots are established properly, then as time goes on, you're able to really influence and impact the community around you in much greater ways. So again, in the human being, we say our roots are really in our heads, and our heads should be planting themselves firmly in proper ideas, proper perspectives, in the fear of God, and in improving our character. And once our head is planted in the right place, it's able to then branch out to everything we do. It's interesting that we pray. We saw it actually last week in the Parsha. In the song they sang at the sea, after they crossed the sea. So it ends, Tavi'ema v'sita ema b'harnach alascha. You should bring them and plant them in the mountain of their heritage. And, you know, they should be planted in the land of Israel and Jerusalem. But the terminology is planting us, like a tree. Sita ema means to plant them. We pray on Shabbos, in the Musaf prayer on Shabbos, we ask for God that He should v'sita ema v'le plant us in our borders, plant us in our land. So we use the terminology of planting us. We understand asking God to bring us to our land. But why do we ask God to plant us in our land? And the idea is that this idea that we daven that Hashem shouldn't just put us in a physical location, but help us sink roots down into holy places. So we want God to take us to Israel, but not just take us so we can sit there on the land physically, but allow our roots to be sunk down into the holy earth of Israel. And because when your roots are sunk, that's influence you. If the roots of the tree in the right places, the tree grows to be big and strong. If its roots are in the wrong places, the tree is not going to grow to be big and strong. So we ask God to please provide for us roots so that we can excel and we can grow in the proper way. So all these ideas come from the concept of the trees reigniting themselves, rebirthing themselves in the spring. Even in the time of the winter, the trees, why do the trees reproduce every single spring? It's because their roots are sunk in the right place. If you cut the tree's roots, it's not going to reproduce next spring. But even the tree looks dead on the top, it's because its roots are planted firmly where they're supposed to be, and therefore when spring comes around, everything's going to blossom. And the tree is going to produce in a beautiful way once again. So for us, it's a very deep lesson that even in the most crazy and turbulent world that we're in, even when times are very rough, when times are difficult, if our roots are firmly planted in the proper places, so we'll be able to get through it. We'll overcome it. We'll regenerate. We'll blossom. We'll produce fruits once again. It applies on a historic level to Jewish people because our roots are firmly planted in God. Even when the worst things come our way, we always are able to regenerate, and that's how it's been over and over again. No matter how many times people have tried to kill us, persecute us, destroy our books, destroy our religion, exterminate us, we've always bounced right back up again. And that's because we have these roots planted firmly in God. Because those roots are planted in the right places, we're able to reproduce. So during the winter of history, you always have that Tu B'Shvat to look forward to, that you know that around the bend is going to be spring. In our own personal lives as well, if we plant our roots, you know, as we say, you're a stable person, you're a well-rooted person. So then even when difficulties, God forbid, come our way in life, we can bounce right back because our roots are firmly planted. Somebody doesn't have their roots firmly planted. Someone's unstable, doesn't have their roots planted in the right places. So when trouble comes their way, they get knocked over and they find it very hard to regenerate and to bounce right back up again. But, you know, just like, you know, spring is that you spring back. You know, the idea of spring is that we can spring right back. If our roots are in the right place, you can spring right back to where you're supposed to be. So that's on a personal level, on a historic level, and that's the idea of Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is the celebration of Tu B'Shvat very much is understood through this perspective of seeing spring around the corner. That we should take tonight and tomorrow as Tu B'Shvat, and we can pray to God that, please God, just like we know that nature is going to reawaken in a month or two, so too let us produce in the areas that we've had difficulties with, let us reawaken in our lives in the areas that we've had troubles, let the Jewish people be able to be reborn despite all of their troubles, their persecutions, and that's something which is a very unique prayer for Tu B'Shvat. You know, there's an old custom of very righteous people that on Tu B'Shvat they'll pray that God should help them find a beautiful Esther of this coming Sukkot. Right? So even though Sukkot seems to be, you know, ages away, right? But they'll pray on the new year of the trees, we pray, God, please bless me this year with being able to find the most beautiful Esther of this coming Sukkot. But to me, we can look a little bit beneath the custom, a little deeper. Now, what does that custom mean? It's that Tu B'Shvat begins a brand new cycle. The Tu B'Shvat, the trees are being ready to produce, and Sukkot is the time where you made your harvest. It's a full cycle of agriculture, from Tu B'Shvat to Sukkot. So right now, at the very beginning of the season, as the trees are just starting to look forward to spring, we say, God, I want to come out on Sukkot on top. You know, please allow me to endure the coming seasons. Allow me to be inspired by all the holidays coming up. Allow me to have an incredible of spring and summer. And I look forward to celebrating on Sukkot, on the final days of this agricultural season. I look forward to celebrating with my beautiful Esrog. So we see how everything kind of comes together. And then after Sukkot, we're plunged back into the winter again. You know, but it's a full gamut of the seasons, the agricultural process, beginning at Tu B'Shvat, heading towards Sukkot. The one additional idea I want to add in the next few minutes, the later Tu B'Shvat, but not exactly, is that the month of Shvat as a whole, you know, every single month carries in it its own unique ideas. You know, if you ever study the Jewish months, which many people don't do, but it's interesting because every single month is associated with different ideas. There's 12 months, 12 tribes. Every month gets a tribe. It's always interesting to figure out how does that tribe connect to this month. And you know, there's a famous Kabbalistic work, the Sefer Yetzirah. And Sefer Yetzirah is actually attributed to Abraham. Abraham wrote this book. It's one book we have from Abraham himself. And it discusses, I've never actually studied the entire work, I've seen things quoted here and there, but it discusses how the creation of the world, what things symbolize, what things mean. And one of the things it does in that book is it tells you each month and it gives you some different ideas of each month. I mean, the whole idea of the astrological signs, which are actually Jewish, the zodiac, those are actually Jewish ideas, you know, those are based on Sefer Yetzirah. Then, you know, God places a different sign for each month. That's where it comes from. So the I'm not sure what this month is. I don't know what sign is in zodiac this month now, but it's for most of Pisces.
Pisces is March. You know, my father was in Pisces, March 12th.
Aquarius.
I'm not sure what's in
that. I don't know, but I don't know if it lines up how they have it in modern days based on how the rabbis had it. But those are Jewish ideas. So what it mentions about, and a lot of times we'll have these very abstract phrases describing each month. But this one, the one for Shvat, is a little easier to understand. It says about Shvat that when Shvat comes in, so God basically associates it with the letter Tzadi. The letter Tzadi associates it with Le'ita, with eating. The word Le'ita means eating. And then it says, and I guess other points as well, but I want to discuss those two points. The letter of the month is Tzadi. Success mystery is the letter of the day. You know, the letter of the month is Tzadi. What?
90.
Yeah, it's 90. I wasn't going in that direction, but it is 90. And the concept of the month is eating, right? Of eating, le'ita. But the word le'ita, which is used, is actually usually the word for eating in Hebrew is achila. Le'ita usually means more of a indulgence or gluttonous eating, something along those lines. Like Esau, when he comes in to eat the famous red stew from Yaakov, he says, "Halitani na, dump that stew down my throat." Basically, that's what he did. He did le'ita. He didn't do achila. What's this idea of Shvat being a month of a tzadi, of the letter tzadi, and the idea of eating? So as we said before, tzadi represents a tzadik. The letter tzadi represents a tzadik, a righteous person. And the idea of eating is something which is often associated with gluttony, with indulgence, with decadence. But Shvat is a time where we show how a tzadik is supposed to eat. I mean, it's the month where we celebrate the fruit trees. That's the month. We're looking at the trees this month. This is Shvat. This is when we're looking at fruit trees. And the important lesson every Jew needs to know is that God very much wants us to enjoy His world, as we discussed many times before, but enjoy it in the right way. So as you celebrate a fruit tree, you can look at it, the fruits are so delicious, and you can think about indulging. Or you can look at it with the perspective of a tzaddik. You could say, I want to look at these fruits and recognize that I could eat them, but in a sanctified, elevated way. I could eat the fruits appreciating God, that He gave us such a variety of sweet fruits. Make my blessing, Braper Eats. I recognize God as the creator of the fruits. And we can really appreciate that God gave us the variety of fruits, the colors, the textures, the tastes. It's incredible. Like I've said before, God could have made one fruit for a human being. It could have been gray, tasteless mush. And we'd be forced to eat it because we have to live. We have to live. But God gave us so much variety, so many delicious things to eat. And we have to appreciate that. The tzaddik eats, he appreciates what he's eating. He sees the hand of God in his food. And when you eat the food, you make your blessing, you eat it, you make your blessing afterwards, you let that food give you nourishment to go about your day and to be an accomplished person, be somebody who does good for the world, who serves God. That's taking the idea of le'ita, of eating, and elevating it up to the level of a tzaddik. And it's very appropriate in the month when we recognize the fruit trees that we should focus on this concept. Now, it could be before we start eating on Purim and Pesach, we should get this in line, in order. But that's the idea of Shvat being the month of the tzaddik, learning how to eat. There's one other idea of Shvat, and we'll close with this. And this one is the explanation. I don't have as much of an explanation for this, but I'll share the idea with you. Is that if you look in the last book of the Torah, Devarim. Devarim is the book where Moshe starts reviewing with the Jews the entire Torah. The Devarim was all a speech given by Moshe, and it's looked at as, it's called Mishnah Torah, Deuteronomy, it's a review. That's what Deuteronomy means, it's the second time around. You know, that's where that word comes from. It's a review of the Torah. And it says, when did Moshe begin reciting his speech? It was B'Ashdei Asar Chosh B'Achad L'Chodesh. In the 11th month, on the first day, Rosh Chodesh Shvat, first day of Shvat, Moshe gave his final, Moshe died on the 7th of Adar, which is next month. His final speech began on the 1st of Shvat. So Shvat is the month where Moshe is teaching the Jews the entire Torah once again. That's the month. So why is that associated with Shvat? I'm not 100% sure, something you can think about. But it does tell us that Shvat is an ideal time for Torah study. Because if this was the month that Moshe chose, this is the month I want to review with the entire people of the Torah. There's no coincidences. It wasn't that Moshe just had a free moment here. It wasn't that God said, well, I'm going to be plucking you off from this world soon, so you better get it in. I mean, there was a plan. So Moshe began reviewing the Jews' the entire Torah during Shvat. That means Shvat's considered an ideal time for Torah study. So how that associates with trees and fruits and the spring, I'm not sure. So everyone can think about that. But we should take that lesson. This is an ideal month that we should focus on Torah study, and hopefully we'll see even extra, you know, productivity through our Torah study during Shvat. So everyone should have a happy Tu B'Shvat and enjoy their fruits.